Are you a marketing or advertising professional looking to stay ahead of the game? Well, we've got the perfect opportunity for you. Advertising Week New York is back for its 19th edition, and it's bigger and better than ever. Picture this: 4 jam-packed days of inspiring keynotes, thought-provoking panels, and networking with the industry's brightest minds. Advertising Week New York is where the world's top brands, agencies, and leaders come together to shape the future of marketing and advertising. But wait, here's the best part. You can secure your spot at Advertising Week New York during the exclusive Early Bird Summer Sale. Act fast and save 30% on all pass types. That's right, you'll have access to every session, every workshop, and every unforgettable moment. Don't miss this chance to gain insights from the industry's trailblazers, connect with potential clients, and elevate your career. But remember, this sale ends on August 1st. Head over to advertisingweek.com/New York today and buy your pass. No promo code needed. The 30% discount applies automatically. Advertising Week New York, the ultimate gathering for marketing and advertising professionals. Be part of the conversation, be part of the innovation, and be part of the future. Get your early bird sale pass now and join us at Advertising Week New York. Looking for the secrets to success? Well, these Futurist Female nominees are ready to share theirs. In this session, recorded at Advertising Week Europe 2023, leaders from across the industry share details on their personal journeys, challenges they've overcome, and how they continue to innovate and evolve and more. This thought-provoking discussion is sure to leave you feeling inspired and empowered.
Thank you, everybody. First of all, it's amazing to see such a full room. And I just want to take a moment to say, it's very exciting to do real life in-person events because you get a kind of chemistry that anybody who's done stuff on Zoom or Teams will know you just don't ever get in that experience. So it's lovely to see some familiar faces and friends, and very exciting. My name is Mimi Turner. I'm the head of EMEA and Latin America for a think tank at LinkedIn called the B2B Institute. And today we're going to be talking about the secrets of success. And the secrets that you leave with today, I feel, are going to directly contribute to your future success. And I've got some incredible panelists that I want to introduce you to. So I'm going to give everybody the opportunity to introduce themselves a bit. But first, it would be lovely if we had another round of applause for Anita, and Chloe. And then you are all absolutely phenomenal. And I thought we'd just cut right into it because, you know, why not? It's a Thursday morning. What does success look like and feel like to you? And he said, what does success look like and feel like? Because if we're going to talk about the secrets of success, I think we need to understand what success is, what secrets are, and then see if we can put a bit of that together.
Wow, you're just diving straight in there. Diving. Aren't you? Like, wow. Hi, everyone. I'm Anissa. I'm a social entrepreneur and have been since I was 15, before I knew what the words meant. And I think for me, we were just talking about this before we got on stage, is success is, for me, about actually having the agency to decide for myself what success is. So I know that I'm truly successful when I get to decide if I'm doing well or not. And I stop looking outside of myself to get that validation and that assurance that I'm on track. Of course, there's metrics and measures that I put in place that tell me, I look at my peers and I get awards and lovely things like that, which kind of nudge me in the right direction. But for me, it's about knowing that I am truly living a life in full colour. That's my life mission. So success is anything that allows me to push into that space further and further.
Do you want to just say a little bit about, like, your journey and how you've come to kind of embody those values?
Yeah, so as I said, I've been I kind of experimented with purpose-driven businesses from the age of 15. I now say that I start and scale purpose-driven businesses, both my own and other people's. And I think I've just always been intrigued about playing with impact and business, and I just believe that they're inextricable. I think the two things have to go hand in hand. So I've been playing with that and experimenting, and I think that's always made me stay in the grey spaces and question, because I've been told so much, oh, so you don't run a real business because I run a purpose-driven one. It's like, no, actually, it's profitable and we're changing lives. I think I'd say I'm winning. So I think I've always kind of stayed in that space. Also, being a young, brown Brummie, I'm having to define that for myself all the time. And, you know, I think a lot about imposter syndrome, and I'm starting to think it's not that I feel like an imposter, it's that the system is not set up to recognise me in all of my beautiful Brummie glory. So I'm starting to really unpick and unpack, and I've been doing that, you know, for a long time. And now I'm just so excited to be helping other people to kind of do that through panels like this, through mentoring, through coaching. Yeah, full stop.
Anita.
I don't know how I follow that, you know, but at least we've got a similar name.
Yeah.
Very different journey for me, but I think success, I suppose it's underlined some of the things that Anita said. It's about being authentic in yourself, finding out who you are. I mean, that self-awareness, I think, is really important. Everyone's going to have their own personal definition of success. And in fact, I was literally just talking to a good friend of mine last night, and she was saying, gosh, you know, I'm not successful in what I do. And I said, let's step back, right? You've got a thriving family. Your work fits around your lifestyle. You are an equal contributor to the wealth and the finance of that family system. What is unsuccessful? What are you seeing and defining? And I think it's about us being okay with us, right? And really embracing, understanding who we are and what drives us. And that may be, I mean, people talk about, you know, finding their dream job. And like, once you find a dream job, that is your passion and it doesn't feel like work. And then you get your work-life balance. I think that's really hard. It's hard for people to find out really what that passion is, particularly at first. So you have to do lots of experiments. So you have to kind of fail perhaps and before you succeed. But and it's also culturally, and there are going to be financial constraints perhaps that hold you back. But even if it's your dream job, you can't do it all of the time. Find those side hustles that really make you light up, make you enjoy doing what you do, because then those opportunities, I think, arise. And I think that's where you start to get success, because you get that feedback, that positive feedback within yourself that powers you forward.
Chloe. Well, hi, I'm Chloe. I think success to me, and it's probably changed throughout my life, as I'm sure it has for everyone. At the moment, I think success for me is being in a position where I can help others. And I know that feels like a very flowery thing to say, but I think I come from a working class background. I definitely didn't have a lot of the opportunities that a lot of people in marketing have. And I think I, even starting out in the marketing industry, I could see that there weren't a lot of people like me. So I think now being in a position where I can hire people that come from my kind of background, I can give those opportunities to other people, I can mentor, I can do all of those kinds of things. I think that's success to me, where I'm in a place where I can help my younger selves in different ways. I think that's definitely, yeah, I think that's success for me. I think definitely mirroring what you guys said as well. You said too much for me to add on.
That happens
but
yeah. a lot.
Next questions from the end. But just Chloe, picking up on that, tell a little bit about your story. And then the thing that you said, and I think also that Anita said, which is that there might be a very fixed idea of success, but we're also reinventing for ourselves, or we have to put ourselves at the centre of a story that we can see and that resembles success for us. And we were having a very interesting conversation earlier about there are different definitions of success, and the idea that now we're all going to pursue what, you know, 30 years ago might have looked like, you know, big tick, is just not viable anymore. So just a little bit within the context of your journey, how have you come up with an idea of success that you are happy with?
Yeah, trying to think of my journey. I think when I was younger, I was a very high achiever, and I think I definitely overextended myself a lot. I grew up
doing dance and doing and being very good in like maths and science and all of those kinds of things and just really focusing on all of that. At the same time, I was very naughty at school, very, very naughty at school. So I was in a strange place generally. But I think I was always kind of wanting to prove myself to other people. I think going back to what you were saying, I think success to me when I was younger was very much like what other people think of me. Like what I wanted an A, but only because then I could tell everyone I got an A rather than having an A for myself. I definitely went to uni for other people. I didn't really want to or need to go to uni. I kind of wanted to go to uni and say I could go to uni because people generally didn't go to university where I was from. And then I pushed myself very hard to get a first for that reason as well. And I think now looking back, I didn't need to do all of those things because I was doing that for other people. So I think, again, going back to what you guys were saying about just kind of realigning in the last few years and really doing stuff for myself and like what makes me happy, and then what makes me happy I've realised is helping other people and bringing other people up. But yeah, it's definitely been a journey. I think it's a shame because I think there's a lot of pressure now, especially with social media and things like that, to kind of know exactly what you want to do from a young age, be successful from a young age, be showing off all of these things from a young age, buying a house, all of that kind of stuff. And actually, again, I could have bought a house a couple of years ago, and I realised I was only doing it so I could post that picture of me with my little key on Instagram. And I was like, I don't actually want to buy a house right now. I don't need to. So yeah, I think actually even success for me has been moving away from that mindset in itself, and actually just doing things for myself and for people that I genuinely care about, rather than trying to prove myself to people that I don't particularly care about, I think.
Does that resonate with you guys?
Yeah, I think this journey thing, I mean, I've got a 12-year-old daughter who, you know, already they're already trying to sort of tailor, you know, where do you want to be, what do you want to do? And I think that's really tough. Like, I wanted to be an airline pilot. I failed. I'm not an airline pilot. You know, I just studied physics to be an airline pilot. I went to air cadets and then got told before I went to university in a careers fair by a gentleman that I couldn't fly a plane. Women don't fly planes. They fix them. They can't fly them, which absolutely mortified me. At that time, I'm that old that there wasn't mobile phones to do the quick fact check. So it wasn't strictly true, but I took it at face value and completely changed what I did. Went to university and studied media production and kind of went into the media route. But I, even at that point, that door closed, but another one opened. And to your point of Chloe around opportunity, I was very aware that I did have another opportunity, and I've become increasingly aware that I'm very privileged and fortunate in having another opportunity. And that also drives me on in terms of this support. I think, you know, we live in such a competitive, like, grim society. The more that we can help each other, and Mimi, I know you're talking about on Monday, the buzz in the audience of just having lots of people energised in a room and that real collaboration and that ecosystem. I think we really do need to thrive with each other and just help each other out, because that's how we're all going to get on in this world, is by just, you know, lending a hand. Who knows where it will lead? But it really is about that power of community spirit.
No, 100%. It was really interesting because we had a couple of events. We've had a couple of events across the week. And yesterday we had a lovely event where we had maybe like 150 women. It was an event hosted by the Female Quotient. And I've also become really obsessed with this idea that human connections, especially that we're in a digital world, a hybrid world, a world that AI is about to kind of completely deposition knowing other human beings, has become really more important. And we had this kind of icebreaker at the session yesterday. So I was kind of doing the intro, and I said, you know, everybody, LinkedIn is a platform about personal connection. Personal connections can be so random, but so powerful. And I just like everybody in the room to turn to the person on the left and to on the right, introduce them and connect with them on LinkedIn. And the thing is, the whole room, I like totally lost the room because that's what everybody did. Like, they stopped listening and they would just turn to the person on their left and turn to the person on their right. And just having permission to say, you know, you might be somebody that I can reach out to in a future moment in my life, just was incredibly powerful. And I think we really underestimate, not necessarily our closest friends or the people that we work most with, but the power of people that we don't really know. And technically it's called loose ties. Loose ties are actually as valuable to you in your career as the people that you work with day in and day out. And so the broader that we can extend those human things. So before you all leave here, turn to the person on the left, turn to the person on the right, and connect with them on LinkedIn, because you'd never know that they're not going to be helpful or useful, and you'll remember this one moment. But I absolutely endorse this sense, because I also think it's going to get more difficult. It's going to get more difficult to meet people in real life, because our lives allow us to be really efficient not doing that. So I think I've blabbed on the secrets of success, but one of the secrets of success is actually just to know more people. Mm. And I wondered whether you could give a sort of sense of, like, surprise. Well, there's two questions. Are there secrets of success, right? Do you have something that you think, I actually know this thing that other people don't know? And also, so let's do that one. And then, but then I think it'd be really interesting to know, like, people who you didn't know particularly well, who had a kind of changed a moment of your career, a moment of your life. But what, you know, are there secrets to your... Chloe, are there secrets to your success?
The secrets. I think one of the secrets to shifts... Wow, there's so many S's in this sentence. Secrets to shifts success. It's one of those things that everyone knows, but not enough companies do, is that just genuinely making sure that people are happy. So my team enjoy coming into work every day. We're a talent management agency, so we manage influencers, and their happiness is very important to us. And we try to put that above profit. So making sure that they aren't just taking deals and signing off campaigns just because it's a lot of money. Actually, like, are you going to be happy doing this? Is it smart in terms of, like, a long-term strategy? All of those kinds of things. So that's something that's really, really key to us. And we've then had an incredible first 2 years. We just turned two, like, last month. We've had an incredible first 2 years and made a lot of money, but that wasn't our key focus. And actually, we've retained staff, so all of the staff, no one's left the company. We've got one of the girls who's been with us for over a year now, one of the girls who's coming up to a year. And I think it's just because that's a key focus for us. And same with mental health as well, making sure that people feel comfortable to not come into work just because they need a mental health day rather than having to say they've got a cold, which I know I used to have to do all the time at work. I think luckily for me, if you look on my LinkedIn, I've had 20 million jobs. And I think I'm happy I had all of those jobs, because I think it really made me understand what a good boss is, what a bad boss is, what a good company is, what a bad company is. And I took all of those things that I learned and then put that into my own company, and it's doing really well because of that. Shall I also answer your second question, or should we come back?
Let's do the first one. That really resonates. I just wondered, so I think what I heard you say is that we actually optimized for people's happiness. Mm. And as a consequence, the other business drivers really advanced.
Yeah.
Had we optimized for the other business drivers, mm-hmm. we might have done as well as we did, but actually people would have been less happy and we'd had a lot more. I just wonder whether that resonates with people. You know, like, if an employer offered that to you, if there was, you know, how much of a difference would that make? Or is that what you're looking... Hands up if that's a thing that you would look for if you thought it was available. Yeah, it's really, really interesting, because one of the very most difficult challenges for all businesses today is to find people that are going to be excited and energised and part of their work community. So it's really interesting. Yeah. I think that's very interesting.
But that's the thing. I think if people are happier, they work better anyway. So I think even if you're not doing it for the right reasons and actually genuinely wanting people to be happy, it does benefit the business a lot. People like to come in. People don't call in sick. People are just happy to come in. One of the girls yesterday, we do 4-day working weeks for our junior members of staff. Again, from, like, a work-life balance perspective, I thought that was important. One of the girls yesterday accidentally put a meeting in for her day off, and she realised afterwards. And she came in, and I was like, why are you here? She's like, oh, no, I just really wanted to do this meeting. So she just came in for the meeting, and then she went back home again. In some of my old companies, I would have definitely moved that meeting, because no way am I coming into the office on my day off. So just stuff like that's really nice. And even the things that they say about the company when I'm not there, is because you can say a lot of stuff when I'm there, you know, I'm paying you. But it's nice to hear them say nice things when I'm not around, because that shows that they actually genuinely are happy, I think.
Anita, what secrets, what do you know that other people didn't know that really helped you?
I'm just going to build on Chloe first and I will answer it, because I think what really resonates here, and I don't remember that many quotes. I think maybe it's the menopause brain coming in now. But one of them is Angela Mayu said, people don't remember what you say. So nobody will remember what we said today. People don't remember what you do, but they do remember the way you make people feel. And that's what's really important. We're human beings. At the end of the day, we are beings that need emotional, physical support, and we are community members. And I say that I say that to really encourage people. We're talking about networking and the power of networking. It is so strong in terms of career progression. It's so strong in terms of influencing. If you're working in a corporate environment, most of the decisions about your career will happen when you're not there, when you're not in the room, by people far more senior that are not exposed to your day to day. So that influence really is a big sphere. And I think it's really, you know, critical that people really think about that and think about who they are socialising in that place and space, who they've got meaningful connections with, and shaping it in the way that you want to be authentic to you. That level of self-awareness that Chloe was talking about, who you've obviously had from a very early age, is something that we all have to work on. And really, secrets of success is when you... I think at school, we kind of like perhaps micromanage the areas that we find hard and difficult and work. I know I was one of those that then worked really hard to try and overcome that. Well, perhaps reverse engineer and go, actually, what are the things that I find really quite easy to do and natural to me and I really enjoy it? Because the more that you can do that stuff, and by the way, you can get a team to do the stuff that you don't particularly enjoy or you're not particularly good at, as soon as you can get that ecosystem, then you've got those complementary skill sets, and then guess what, it flies, right? And everyone's enjoying what they're doing because they're doing the things that they're good at. You can get into that jet stream. Not every day, there's things that everyone might have to do that they don't want to, but the more that you can favour to things that you find come naturally to you, doesn't mean that they come naturally to everyone. And it's about honing in on that, and that's what I think will make you successful.
Yeah, because if you find something easy, and it's not because it is easy, it's because you may have some particular disposition towards it, and that means that you'll be incredibly motivated to be even better at it. Whereas, you know, the best will in the world, you know, I find it very difficult to be motivated by learning another function in Excel, because it just reminds me of all the other functions I've all forgotten, even though I tried to really hard to remember them. So though that's not my jam, but the thing about doing something that's easy is not that it's trivial, it's that actually it gives you a good base to be superb at it. Anissa, secrets of your success, and talk a little bit about your success, because you're actually off to do even more successful things later today. So so that is very interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's like when I'm going on a health kick and then I sit and Google, like, what's the secrets to, like, you know, getting a snatch waist and big booty. But basically, you know, the thing is, there aren't secrets, there's ingredients, and I think it's about the way that you put that recipe together. So I actually think instead of secrets to success, it should probably be called stories to success, because it's only the way that we've combined networking, being authentic, all of that kind of stuff into something, you know, that's made it work for us. I think that path of effortlessness, I'd say effortlessness over easy, actually, is the way that I'd describe that, what comes naturally to you. But I do think there is something that I've learned recently that's really helping shape me transition and step up. So I set up a business 10 years ago when I came out of university. I've spent the last few years transitioning from CEO to exec chair and owner. So I've now got a managing director. I've got a team of 15 people. We've hit a 7-figure kind of turnover. Things are going well. We're impacting thousands of young people's lives every year, which is the best bit. But I learned a phrase, which is, what got you here won't get you there. And I think I really struggled with the transition in my own leadership, because I was a grafter, I was a hustler, I've been working since I was 15 years old. So I was first in, last out, I was in the trenches, I was taking home the problems, I was doing all of that. And actually it stopped me allowing my MD to come in, first of all, because I had to transition back and out. I was so in the detail, I had to start to helicopter up and become the space for strategy. So I had to really transition, I had to unlearn everything that I'd spent 10 years learning in order to be the leader that she needed and the business needed me to be. And now, and I'll be honest with you, I've got growing pains around it. Like sometimes I sit and I think, it just doesn't quite fit. But I know that I'm evolving and I'm transitioning. And so as my idea of success changes, I don't work full time. I don't know all my team's ins and outs anymore. I hear that and I'm like, I remember that. But as that changes, the way that I behave, the way that I act, the way that I do, where my diary is, all of that needs to change with me. So what got you here won't get you there. Letting go and unlearning has been one of the biggest hacks, if there are any, kind of my success. And I think, can I share one quick story about the evolution of that as well? I think, so I've been really lucky to win a lot of awards. So tonight I'm at the EY Entrepreneur of the Year retreat because I'm a finalist for that, which is ace. Thank you. Thanks. So
respect to the other people who are also in that fine competition, but we're rooting for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'll tell them when I get there. I've been really lucky. I was named Forbes 30 under 30. I got an honorary doctorate at 26 years old. But I think one of the best stories that I can share about the evolution, the point that I'm making about letting go of what other people think, owning yourself and your, what you find important and also what got you there won't get you here is I was given an award from the Queen, so a British Empire Medal at 23 years old for my work from being a teenager. So if the MBE is like Waitrose, a BEM is like Lidl, basically. No shade to Lidl, I love Lidl. So I was awarded that, 23, one of the youngest people in the UK to ever get it. And I'll be really honest with you, it did not sit comfortably with me for the years following that. There's barely any kind of minoritised communities that are awarded these kind of medals from the Queen. And I felt very uncomfortable about it. They were telling me I was successful. The young people that I worked with were really proud of me. I felt discomfort, but I took it and I kind of grew with it and I kind of hid it. And in the pandemic, in the kind of wake of Black Lives Matter and George Floyd, I decided I'm raising a half Jamaican, quarter Iranian, quarter English boy. And I decided that I do not want to glorify anything that memorialises empire in that way right now. So I actually wrote to the Lord Lieutenant, and I wrote to the monarchy and said, I really love that you've awarded me and I see the principles behind this, but I cannot accept this in this new context, in this change. So I actually gave it back. And I know that's controversial and you'll have thoughts and feelings on that, I'm sure. But for me, it was the agency and the freedom to be aligned to my values and to live in a way that feels good for me. So I don't think I could have done that at 22, 23 years old. I think I needed that journey. I think I needed to win these other awards and be successful in all these other ways. I think I needed to have my baby boy to get there. And I kind of wanted to share that as a story because it's allowed me to unpick a lot around validation in a way that I feel really comfortable to sit in a room full of strangers and share that as an anecdote, really, because it is quite a personal one.
That's an incredible story. I realise that I completely forgot to say, if you've got any questions, please put them in the Slido. But I was just wondering if you could just show some hands, just in case people did have questions. If you have a question, just put your hand up and we'll come back to it. But we've just got about 3.5 minutes still on the clock. We've had a lot of powerful stuff. That's a very powerful story.
Sorry.
I just want to ask, is the opposite of success is perceived as being failure, right? And I wondered whether within a very short time you could talk a little bit about either transcending failure, because I think failure, which I have experienced quite a few times, creates some other thing, like it just forces a thing that would not have been possible had you succeeded. So in a funny way, there's a fork in the road, and both of those take you somewhere. Success would take you somewhere, right? It would take you maybe where you think you want to go. Failure also sometimes is just a much more painful route, but it does take you somewhere that success could never take you. And I've had that experience of failing many times, so I'm an expert on the road
not to success. But I'm just wondering, in your lives, like, how do you deal with the fear? I have less fear of failing than is good for my health. But anyway, how do you deal with the fear?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm a very bad loser. I'm a very, very bad loser. And I think I remember my mum saying to me, when I did my driving test, I failed on the first one and I'd never failed anything ever. And my mum said to me, good, you needed to fail something. Like, you needed to feel that and now you're okay. Like, you didn't die, you're okay. So I think that was good. And I think it's important to experience failure for that exact reason, because it's generally not the end of the world. But I'll be honest, I'm not very good at failing. I'm not gonna lie at all. However, I do think what I have become better at in recent years is accepting that I can't always control everything, because I'm definitely a control freak, and I think accepting that I can't always control things and actually not putting too much energy into things that I can't control and just accepting it, I think that's what I've become better at. But I definitely need to become better at failing. I can't advise on that, because I'm not good at it.
We'll share some tips later.
Yeah, I need to speak to you.
I can show you how to do that. I can show you how to confront that challenge. Because I know we've not got very much time left, lovelies, but Anita and Anissa, fear of failure.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing, you know, failure, that's a really strong, powerful term. It's got to be reframed as, what can you learn from it? Because if you don't, you can go into that spiral of despair and disruption. And it's about, how do you, that glass half empty, glass half full theory is, what can you learn from that experience? You've got to set back. I mean, Anissa was very strong in sort of this concept of continual learning and evolution of us. Like, we are shaping and curating our lives all the time. It never stops. And we've all got to just kind of go on that journey and embrace that learning, that change, and take the opportunities as they come. And that includes when things don't go to plan. So maybe that's a sort of less harsh way of putting it, but when things don't go our way, what do we learn from that? And how do we self-adjust in that point? What can we take away for another day to try and self-protect us from that happening again, if it really does feel as dire as Chloe was explaining it does in her perspective? How do you self-control that? That's what I would take away from that. And I know I've got a better hand.
Give Anissa the last word, because we're going to go into a minus 1 minute and then we have to kind of wrap up. But
I'll just be blunt. I think failure is inevitable. If you have an appetite for success, you have to have an appetite for failure. I think you have to be able, and actually practicing detachment of both is true success, because if you can hold on to the awards and the wins and the profit and the whatever, and then the things that you mess up, and keep going and stay focused on the intention and the purpose, then you're on the right track.
That's very inspiring, and I 100%, I think that's something that hearing you say it, I feel, that creates all sorts of options. It just really rests with me to say thank you to all of you for coming, and thank you to this incredible panel. Turn to the person on the left, turn to the person on the right, connect with them on LinkedIn. Human connections and the power of human connections is going to change. That is a differentiator in the future. They're going to change one another's lives. And on which note, I think maybe that is the secret of success, to have options that you don't even know. So thank you very much, amazing ladies, Chloe, Anita, Anissa.
Thanks for listening. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing network of audio content at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.